Good morning, everyone. It is 9:02 a.m., November 26, 2024. This is an informal hearing regarding the XL Energy bill credit rider, and our case number is PU-24-362. We'll go around the room in a moment here for everyone to put their attendance on the record. I want to emphasize, though, that this is an informal hearing, so we deal with only undisputed information. If topics come up that are under dispute, we will have to cancel this hearing and schedule a formal hearing. With that, I'm joined today by Commissioners Sherry Haugenhoffert and Julie Fedorchek. I don't really have any opening comments except to say this is one of several informal hearings on various XL electric riders. And so if people are listening in or wondering what the deal is, all these different hearings on things, that's just the way the regulated electric business is, with a regular rate plus a series of riders. Some of these are annual, and so they kind of come up at the same time, but they are separate topics, and that's why they're separate cases. With that, I'll turn it over. Well, for opening comments, I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner Fedorchek, and then to Sherry as portfolio holder.
I don't have any opening comments other than to say I like how we arranged these all in one day. I think it's pretty efficient and good for the company, and the conversations lend themselves to each other. So,
good point. Commissioner Haugenhoffert is portfolio holder. I will turn it over to you for opening comments, and then just go ahead and lead it into the case.
Should we have XL announce who's here?
Yeah. Correct. Everybody, including staff.
Go around.
Lee Clark, commission staff.
Victor Shook, commission staff.
Alex Nesbitt, I'm a regulatory policy specialist with XL Energy.
Amber Headland, I'm a regulatory manager at XL Energy.
Benj, do we have you online?
Yeah, Benjamin Halama with XL Energy.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, I don't have really any opening comments except that I am glad that we scheduled all these together to go through it because they do blend in. So with that, I know we turn it over to the company. I see that you have a PowerPoint, so Alex, I'll turn it over to you. And what I'll ask is, do you want us to ask questions as you go along or save them till the end?
Yeah, absolutely. As always, feel free to ask questions at any point in time. It flows better if you're just sort of having a conversation. If there's anything that comes up that piques your interest, want more information on, definitely don't hesitate.
Will do. Yep. So with that, I'll turn it over to you, Alex.
Perfect. Thank you. And we're very thankful in the season of Thanksgiving that you could have us here today. We've got a big day. It'll be a plan three acts. First one today that we're talking about is various refunds via the bill credit rider. We probably could have come up with a catchier name than various, but it at least was accurate that it was three various refunds through the bill credit rider. You've had some experience with the BCR in the past, largely for the DOE refund that we've put through it. The way that the BCR works, it's over a 12-month period of time, and we use a negative rate per kilowatt hour for each customer class. As you see here, these are kind of the high points of the three various refunds that we're proposing to put through the BCR starting on January 1, 2025. All three items, they don't really have that much connection with each other, but we proposed it this way just from a convenience standpoint to not be looking at three different potential refunds all coming through at the same time. Internally, that's helpful as far as just flowing it through, and then also just to be mindful of commission's time, staff time, to just do it all into one. That's just the way that we're proposing it, and it's just a lot cleaner and more efficient this way.
Alex, can I ask a question on that?
Yep.
What were other alternatives that you looked at?
As far as refunds?
Yeah, on this. As far as I understand the efficiency, but I'm just curious what other options were out there.
I think that, and I know in other jurisdictions sometimes we mail things out, but this one I know in general the BCR, my predecessor Dave always kind of touted as something that you could plunk in money throughout times. This one, it just sort of worked out that all three came together at pretty good timings to do it, but I think in the future if they're 4 months apart, 6 months apart, we would probably plan to put them through the BCR. Obviously, there are other methodologies that we can do refunds through, but this is something that we're working on, and as this, I think this is maybe the third iteration that we're doing the BCR, so we're getting more effective at it, and it's going well so far. But that's, so this is the main way we've looked at it. The main kind of variable would potentially be timing in the future to not batch them together.
Okay.
Yeah. So the three different refunds that we're going to be looking at today, we have three separate land sales in Minnesota that I'll get to in a little bit. The second item is a matter that you're familiar with that has to do with U.S. Department of Energy refunds associated with damages due to the partial breach of its contract to not take spent nuclear fuel. This is the 15th payment, and I'll say that we're not proposing to do anything novel outside of the prior order that we have from, I think, two times ago, which is that we'll get it, we'll propose it, run it through, and then pretty much just have a compliance filing on the back end that talks about trackers over and just the overall time that we would need to finish it up or anything over what we had projected. So that one is going straight through, no modifications whatsoever from what we've proposed in the prior order that has been approved. But once again, we're just including it here from a convenience standpoint to be able to kind of look at it on a day like today, just have it all in one place, and then to just be able to see the rider, and then to just have an understanding of what this dollar amount is that a residential customer would see in one place as compared to having to kind of add them all together. The third one that we'll be talking about, and Benj Halama is on the line, he'll be speaking to that one, that has to do with an earnings sharing due to revenue exceeding the 9.75% return on equity that was set in our last electric rate case. Overall, the refund that we're going to be looking at is $15,497,834, and for an average residential customer from January 1 to December 31 of next year, they'd be seeing about a $77.19 refund, which equates to about $6.43 per month for that refund. Going into the first of three, and also the first of three land sales that we'll be talking about, is the Sherco land sale. This is 348 acres of buffer land that was at our Sherco generating station. This is a piece of land that we no longer need. Selling it would have no impact on our operations, reliability, or safety. In discussions and partnering with the city of Becker, we were seeking opportunities to use this land, specifically usage of the land for data centers. So we ended up coming up with a land sale agreement with Elk River Technologies, and specifically in that sale agreement, it was stipulated that it needed to be used for a data center. So that sale price, it concluded earlier this year. Sale price on that was $7.9 million with a North Dakota jurisdictional allocation of $391,472. We are looking to move on this, develop it quickly, just because with a data center of this magnitude, there's benefits for the community and also benefits to have them as a customer on our system.
I have a question about that.
Yep.
It's kind of shocking to me that you can go from a coal facility to solar and have 350 extra acres. How is that possible? Or what demanded this buffer that you had? Was that something that Minnesota required, or? I mean, solar takes way more land than coal, so I just, my brain couldn't get past, like, where, how did this acreage become available and what demanded the buffer? I mean, it's great. I'm just curious.
Yeah, and I would be hazarding a guess as far as, and the two, the Sherco generating facility and the solar are in different locations, and I would have to imagine that as far as the loading, unloading, and just the proximity around it, they just would have different, I don't know if you want
to. Do you want to take a mic, please?
I won't take too much time. Yeah. I'm not an expert on coal construction.
You'll have to turn it on.
Hi, I'm Al Krug with Xcel Energy. So these facilities were built primarily starting in the 70s. And so at that time, well, frankly, land was, you know, fairly inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So we did, at that time, the communities wanted very large buffers. And so we just simply bought up enormous amounts of land at that time to, you know, create those buffers. So now that we're in another transition, even though the solar does take up a lot of land, there was just always quite a bit of buffer land available. And so it's really, it's true, solar does take up very large quantities of land, but we had a very significant amount of buffers based on the standards at that time and land prices.
So I think that Alex was saying, too, that the solar isn't going on the Sherco land. You bought different land for the solar. Is that true?
I'm not aware.
Are you aware?
It's on, or it's adjacent. It's not, yeah. But, you know, you would know better than me.
So. It's not on the exact site where the facilities are, but it's still essentially that area.
Okay. Yeah. And did you buy new land for the solar facility, or is that all part of the buffer?
I don't think we didn't purchase any land to develop the facility, no.
Or contracts with leased? No. All on existing.
Was that land rented out for agriculture, or was that like a wildlife thing, or what did you do with all that vast amount of acreage?
Yes, thousands of acres.
Yeah. Come on. Somebody knows more than I.
It's hard to believe.
Zev Simser, counsel for Xcel. Yeah, like Al was saying, it's a really big piece of property. And they have leased it to other to folks for timber, for ag work. As that area becomes more industrial, it's been more of a sort of environmental preserve. One of the things that they're concerned about is making sure they don't get any endangered species living in the trees there as we try to convert that land. But, you know, it's a lot of land. You can't walk it. You need to take a truck around to drive around it.
That's a foreign concept in North Dakota. That doesn't happen because it's not allowed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, if you ever get to, well, it's out there. It's on the other side of the tracks in Becker. And so all of that was the buffer. And as the years have gone on, there's industrial construction there. And then the city of Becker is trying to build out more industrial uses out there. And there's just a lot of land that we can get rid of.
So for clarification, the city of Becker required that large of a Becker? I mean, buffer? Becker. I'm off and running. Yeah.
I mean.
No.
I don't know. I don't know that anybody knows for certain anymore. But I think at the end of the day, part of the community relations required a large buffer, and it was not incrementally more expensive.
Thanks for the clarification.
Seven. Good question.
I have a question, though, for you
Before
we move on from this page, Ellie.
Okay.
So in the original application, when I went through the three things, the accumulation of them, and added the numbers up, they didn't come to the $15,497,000. Now I see in this, what you handed out this morning, it's the DOE settlement one that's different than what you had in your original filing. Did they change that? Was this a misprint or what happened there?
Correct, and good catch. We just wanted to be as accurate as possible that the other two numbers are the same. It's the middle, 551,161. That's including interest. So that's where just that the 15... 497,834. That's how we add up to that.
Because you had that total before already, but instead of $551,000 for the DOE settlement, you had $538,000.
I think so, yeah. That probably would just be an error then in the application itself, and we caught it in this, and we could go back and probably make a revision on that. So thank you. The other two land sales that we're going to talk about, these are significantly smaller in size and also just the dollar amounts associated with them as well. The first one that we're going to be talking about is something that the city of Becker needed for a new lift station, and it was another item that was just not necessary. It was a parcel of land that we owned that we no longer needed, wasn't necessary as a buffer, and physically separate from the other land that the company owns. On the slide here, you see the jurisdictional allocation for North Dakota is about $9,682. And that was 6.8 acres of land near the Sherco Generating Station. The third part that we're going to talk about is a land sale to the city of Becker, and this also included, city of Becker approached the company. I know this is the city of Red Wing. It's on the wrong side. This one includes a small easement as well. So this was 10.94 acres. The city of Red Wing was seeking easements and other property interests for a road improvement project near Prairie Island Generating Facility. Something too important that's that I pointed out here, just the fact that our operations should be maintained uninterrupted, should be able to get access throughout construction that's going on during this time. As you'll see here, the North Dakota jurisdictional allocation is $4,094. And on to the second overall item of our three items that we'll be talking about in this matter is the 15th Department of Energy settlement. This is the 15th of what will for sure be the 15th, 16th, and 17th payments. This one is for the period of January 1, 2023 to December 31, 2023. The 15th payment was received on October 31st, 2024, in the amount of $10,617,252. And the North Dakota jurisdictional portion is $551,161. As I alluded to in my opening remarks, this one, we're just refunding it directly in accordance with the order that was set out in PU 23044, which is, I believe, where we dealt with DOE number 13, where we're going to receive it, provide you an application such as this, how we're going to refund it. We refund it, and then we'll provide a compliance filing on the back end. We have to refund it within 120 days, I think provide notice within 30 days, can flow the refund within 45 days, and then on the back end, it's the compliance filing. So for this refund, we're just going straight forward with that, once again, included in this overall application just from a convenience standpoint so we can look at them all together.
So I'm getting to something that I'm sure I've been told in the past, but just sure. Don't recall. What did you mean, though, when you said this is the beginning of, for sure, the 15th, 16th, and 17th payments or something on that order?
So once again, if somebody in the room would want to speak to it better, and I've read in all these applications how the DOE refunds work, and obviously we continue to be unable to store spent nuclear fuel at these locations, and therefore we continue to receive settlement proceeds accordingly. And to my understanding, we are continuing to extend this settlement payment and the 15th, 16th, and 17th for the upcoming future years. Those are also, they are for certain, those settlement amounts are set and they will be flowing.
They just chose to announce those that far out? Do they always announce 3 years out or what?
That's a good question. I don't know if there's anybody else in here of.
Uh,
Actually, the amounts will, you receive kind of a general indication of amounts, and then each year we work with DOE to get very specific. It's sort of like they do a mini rate case on the expenses we've incurred for the year. So we work back and forth with them, and then we finally hone in on a precise amount each year. So it could vary from whatever has been announced.
And so when this started, this must be based on some decision from presumably about 15 years ago. Right. And did the federal government commit to paying this until they achieve their original commitment of providing a permanent storage space? Or is this like for 20 years or 30 years or some set amount of
time? Not they didn't commit willingly. I'll say they we sued them in combination with other utilities that were storing nuclear fuel. We sued the Department of Energy, ultimately settled. So all of these payments are the result of that settlement. They will continue until the DOE honors that commitment to find a permanent storage.
Thank you.
So is there a set, so you, it's kind of like a mini rate case, I would assume, to audit your costs that you're putting forward. Is there a set percentage amount of those costs that, that the settlement provides for?
There isn't a percentage. They're essentially looking at our capital and O&M costs associated with the storage facility, the ISFACI, and calculating that based on, as I said, similar kind of audit or review of our costs there.
Okay. Is it close to the amount of your costs for the storage?
Yes, it is. It's very close. The disputes are very small, usually.
Okay. Do the numbers you're putting forward include the additional monies that you're paying to the Prairie Island community?
No.
It does not?
No, they do not include that.
Okay.
We did attempt that at one time, but that was not part of the settlement.
Correct. Okay.
If the government ever came up with a site to store, would you have to pay for storage there?
Let me back up. We are already paying for storage. I believe it still is a mil per kilowatt hour. I believe that's the payment generated by the facility. So we've been paying all this time.
You're still, yes. You're paying for what?
Well, development of the site, which isn't occurring right now, but there, ultimately, we would continue to pay for that development of that site.
So. Do you know where that money goes?
I wouldn't know. I mean, it's in a general fund.
It's gone, obviously, but it's on a ledger someplace.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. So you're paying in based on, and this formula was set back in the 70s?
Probably even before. Yeah, when the NRC was formed, I suppose.
Okay.
I don't know the history of that, really.
So you pay in a certain amount and then you get back. I wonder if it's the same. Is it about the same what you get back?
I would have to look back and see.
Interesting. I'll have to study this more. Thank you.
Obviously, there's a long history. Maybe you've been to the site out in Nevada.
I haven't.
But I don't think at one time it was an active site. They were giving tours out there, but I don't know that that's the case anymore. But ultimately, that effort was halted, so we're in this phase right now.
Yeah, 15 or 20 years ago at our NCSL committees, that seemed like it was just right around the corner, a locked-in certainty. Permanent nuclear waste storage was just right around the corner. Now here we are 20 years later and it's nowhere in sight.
Yeah. I wonder if there's been a change of heart with the industry as you've worked with it. Maybe it doesn't make as much sense to have one site where we're shipping this waste all the time. Maybe it makes more sense to keep it where it is.
I'm not an expert in that area. There's obviously there are other countries actually reuse the fuel, recycle the fuel. So that still is there's still potential to do that, but at this time I don't have enough background on that.
Okay.
Thank you, Al.
Thanks, Al.
Good questions. Thank you, commissioners. With that, if there are no further questions on that issue, we'll go to the third prong of the various refunds, which being the over-earnings for the 21 and 22 electric annual reports. And with this, I'll turn it over to Benj, who should be online, that'll speak to slides 6 and 7, or 7 and 8.
Good morning, everyone. As Alex noted, the last piece of the refund is related to our jurisdictional annual reports for 2021 and 2022. Coming out of the last rate case, the settlement in that rate case set up a earnings sharing mechanism where any amount over a weather normalized earnings of 9.75% would be 100% refunded to North Dakota customers. And so in our 2021 jurisdictional annual report, after some discovery on that one, the final result was 11.34% ROE, or a refund obligation of approximately $7.1 million. Our 2022 jurisdictional annual report reported ROE of 11.28%, and that one resulted in a refund obligation of approximately $7.4 million. And so in total, the refund for those 2 years is approximately $14.5 million. And so that's what we're proposing to refund through the BCR starting on January 1, 2025. If you go to the next slide, there are two items in the jurisdictional annual report that where the company and commission staff disagree. And so the first item is related to the MISO planning resource auction. And so that was a significant revenue received as part of the 22 and 23 PRA auction. And so in that auction, the company received an amount based on excess capacity that was available in the NSP system. And so then we accounted for that amount in North Dakota, consistent with how MISO calculated the revenue received for the excess capacity that we bid into that auction. The second item related to our weather normalization adjustment in 22 and 2021, and that adjustment was related to the impact the company calculated as a result of COVID. And so in the summer months when AC usage is higher, more people working from home, and so our adjustment for weather normalization accounted for that, and staff disagreed with that assertion. And so neither one of these items, the contested components of them, are included in the refund at this point, and the company will be providing testimony on these issues in an upcoming rate case.
Benj, can you go through, just repeat which issues you agree with, like you all agreed with staff, and which ones are still outstanding? Just clarify that.
Yeah, the only two issues where there's disagreement is the two on this slide here. And so, you know, the rest of the jurisdictional annual report as filed is not in dispute, and that's the numbers on the previous slide, a total $14.5 million. The two disputed issues relate to the determination of the amount of excess revenue from the PRA auction that is owed to North Dakota customers, specifically related to the disallowed resources that are not approved for cost recovery in North Dakota. And then second one, oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then the COVID weather normalization.
Correct. Yeah. So there's the weather normalization process is consistent with past practice. The only additional component that was added to it during 2021 and 2022 was just accounting for what we saw as increased energy usage in the summer for AC when it was evident that there was more people working from home in those months.
Okay. All right, and these are just, they're going to the rate case, so they're not really something to explore right now.
Correct.
I was wanting to emphasize that. So those things will be disputed later, but for this filing, I'm sensing agreement to just put it into the, as far as this rider goes, and that there's really not dispute on the rider at this point.
Correct. And that's what we're seeing on slide number 7 is the uncontested portions, which make up the large amount of it. We were wanting to get those back to customers as quickly as possible, hiving those off, dealing with the smaller contested portions in the upcoming electric rate case.
Okay. So to put a little more background on these, so the reason we're just now talking about 21 and 22 refunds is the company and staff have been working on through these issues for the last 2-3 years. This is what we've been able to come to agreement on so far. Those other items, we remain at odds over the calculation methodologies for us accounting people. It's all in those numbers all the time. Yes, so I think originally when the company filed 2021 earnings report, it included a different methodology for weather normalization. Our kind of discussions were largely that at the time the settlement was filed, we had the assumption that the original weather normalization methodology that has been used for decades, at least a decade, 15, 20 years, something like that, would be used. And kind of always, my thought is when we have settlement things, there's something given to gain something. And it's not necessarily a one-for-one. You can't say, well, you gave up that to give this. But with that in mind, there was assumptions on both sides. And we should use those same assumptions, I guess, was what our position was. So appreciate that the company went back to the original weather normalization methodology, which is why we were able to come to agreement on those earnings calculations for 21 and 22.
So this brings up, not related to this issue, but something that I'm sprinkling along as like things that have perplexed me over the last 11 to 12 years. And I think bear further work or consideration. The review that the staff does of annual reports is super important every year, and you guys do it, but we don't focus on it much. And I've always felt like we should focus on it a little bit more, and I always contemplated bringing those kind of from consent into the regular agenda to talk about it a little bit more. But this certainly speaks to the importance of that process, and I do think that there would be room in the future for informals or something on a more routine basis about the annual reports, because it is us going back to the companies and making sure that the rates are in line with what their earnings should be and not too much. And I think that sometimes gets missed by the public, that we do that. And that it is like the compliance kind of role that we do have that's pretty active and important, and often like reveals things like this. Not that the company brings forward the overhangs too, but it's really, I think, an important piece of making sure the rates are right. So, for what it's worth.
Yeah. And historically, so we would only potentially have a dispute to the extent that the over-earnings have a cap in place. And we do with some of our utilities, but certainly not all of them, do we have a cap in place. So that kind of complicated matters. But when we don't have disputes after the point we get done, let's say we finish all of the electric annual reports, there's a summary report that we would generate and provide to the three of you that kind of shows our three regulated electric utilities, how they stack up against one another, against the state as a whole and against other kind of states in the region and the U.S. averages. It's kind of, I very much like giving that report to you guys because it's very informative to how we sit relative to other utilities in other states. And that's kind of been delayed by this. I didn't want to put information out there that would be changing. So that will be forthcoming.
I would think you should do that in an, some sort of a meeting so that it gets a little bit more attention.
We certainly can.
Because it is a really, you know, important check every year, and it's a good report to the public about what's going on and how well our utilities are performing and where we stand nationally on rates, et cetera. As costs continue to grow, that will be even more important, I think, to have those kind of conversations with the public.
I would agree. It generally, so it, since it isn't something that gets docketed for all of our companies, it's not a case in and of itself, but right. I would be happy to talk about it during a meeting. Because similarly, you know, just like we have electric, we have the same for gas, and I have this, we make the same exact report per decatherm, you know, different rates and things like that. So, yep.
Thanks for that context, Vic. That would conclude my remarks, unless you have any additional questions.
How are you going to, if this goes through, lumping all three of these situations into mm-hmm. one rider,
yep.
how are you going to communicate that with your ratepayers?
Yeah, good question. So this would be effective January 1, 25 through December 31, 25, so the entirety of next year. In the application, I think we have a proposed customer notification, customer notice on page 8. With that, the first month that it would show up on a customer's bill, there would be that customer notice as well that talks about three different refunds, and it states your credit will be shown as bill credit rider for the next 12 months on your billing statement. So you get this notice just one time the first month that the refund comes through, but then the entire year there will be something on a customer's bill that says bill credit rider. And it has, I think, the dollar amount associated with that refund as well.
I saw this, and so I apologize. But I have a question and follow-up to that. With the DOE payments, I'm just curious, do you get calls on it when you see a statement on bills? Do ratepayers call you and say, explain the DOE settlement, you know, when it's a bill credit?
That's a good question, and sometimes the calls will come to the commission and then come through me, and then sometimes I'll get them obviously directly from our billing folks, other people, and I haven't received a question directly on it. I don't know if you have any.
Yeah, I don't have specific statistics about what the customers have called about, but our call center agents are trained in all the different credits that we give to customers or riders that we have on our bills. And they can easily refer to that reference manual they have. And having formerly worked in the call center, I can tell you we get a lot of questions from customers about the different charges on their bills. And I would not be surprised to see customers calling in about the specific charges or credits like the DOE.
Yeah, I'm hearing more and more from people like the line items and all these riders and all that. What does all this mean? It's minus, plus, up, down. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
So, I know if this were approved, so this is a 1 year thing, and then we'll be recalculated again, and presumably there'll be another one for next year. But this is a very large one because there's 2 years worth of the over earnings. What happens, so if part of that is disputed, but we get into a rate case, and in the rate case it's determined that what is being done here is not the correct amount, does this amount continue to get refunded then for the rest of the 12-month period, even though the rate case is now determined that's the wrong amount?
So that's why we specifically hive this portion off. It's not contested, and it won't be contested. We're of the understanding that our calculations, the over earnings, the refund associated with it. The non-contested portions for 21 and 22, those are done and those are over with, and that's why we put it in this to get
it
back.
Future ones that will be.
It's those two contested portions that Benj talked about, the COVID adjustments and then the MISO PRA auction, that those are the ones that you will see in rate case testimony that we'll be dealing with there.
Just to add a little bit to that, if there are additional refund amounts that are determined in the context of that rate case, they could either be addressed, through a future bill credit rider adjustment, or they could be addressed through, the interim rate refund or some other mechanism coming out of the rate case.
And this sort of goes against what I normally like to do, but I'm just thinking of, this concept that has been discussed here a little bit about, the confusion and the billings with what all this means. And so this could come out and, oh, great, we get a reduction of $6.48 a month. Then a few months later, the rate case gets done and I haven't seen the rate case yet. I'm guessing a good chance it's not because of over-earnings that you're wanting a reduction in rates. So then all of a sudden they go back up again. And so as much as I hate holding on to money till later, is there merit in kind of just holding off on this and somehow extending this out over some period of time of the new rate structure, whether that would be for 3 years or whatever is a fair presumption of the length from one rate case to another to offset whatever increase might be coming on the rate case?
It's a good question. I know just internally we talked about the timing of it, the offsetting, and it will come up. Or this refund, if you're looking at your bill, obviously it won't directly offset, but people, as they're receiving their bills in the coming months, this will be offsetting the interim rate to at least a certain extent. But you're correct, it's going to be for 12 months as compared to the timing associated. Obviously, looking at refunds, you always contemplate intergenerational inequity, things of that nature, but that's always just kind of the push and pull, but it's a really good comment. Question.
Considering that some of this stuff has been sitting there for already 3 years, I don't think it should be delayed personally because customers are coming and going all the time. So, just my thought. I wouldn't hold it longer. But, in the communication, you can make that, emphasize that this is, just explain it like it is, over earnings, and, there's another rate case. All of this will be rethought, including the fact that you have earned, does certainly set a tone for the rate case, so...
Anything else here?
That's all I've got. Thank you.
The next one is scheduled to start at 10, right?
Correct.
So, are there any objections to the evidence that's been produced here becoming part of the official record? And when I say the evidence, I mean the handout from Excel as well as the recording.
No objections.
No objection from staff.
Okay, so the evidence produced today will become a part of the official record upon which a decision is made. Are there any other matters for this informal? Okay, so we will reconvene at 10 o'clock for the next one. And with that, this informal hearing is dissolved. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.